Hi, I'm Dr. David Martin. I'm the founder of MCAM. I'm the founder of Purple Bridge Management, a quant fund. I'm now the founding chairman of Ross Energy. Prior to that, I was assistant professor of radiology and orthopedic surgery at the University of Virginia. I was the founder of the first clinical trials program for medical devices at the University of Virginia in the 1990s at the medical school there. My background is in biology, psychology, sports medicine, orthopedics, and radiology. Got my PhD from the University of Virginia, my master's from Ball State University, my undergraduate from Goshen College in Indiana, and have been working in various aspects of services to the federal government going back to the 1980s. So I've been kind of in this race for a long time. If we go back and look at my first briefing to intelligence and law enforcement agencies on what we call coronavirus, my first briefing was in 2002. My first published briefing was in 2003. And the reason why we had this information is because my company, MCAM, beginning in 1998, had all of the patents and patent applications from patent offices around the world, which fed into a system that we used to score intangible assets for banking. And one of the things that we did was we started tagging very interesting anomalies in the data, where we started seeing things that appeared to be potentially violations of biological and chemical weapons laws, not only in the United States, but around the world. And it is because of that that we became aware of the work at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, when Ralph Baric filed the patent on an infectious replication defective clone of coronavirus in 2002. Now, that would not have been something that would have drawn my attention had it not been for the fact that in the 1990s, because of the treaty-restricted technology transfer work we had been doing across the entire decade of the 90s, we had about 64 pathogens that we were monitoring. And we had system alerts in our data systems to say, if anything shows up, just flag it, right? So we weren't looking for something. We were just aware that if something would show up in the data, we'd want to have a look at it. And what made this particular patent application so bizarre is that when you take a step back and examine it, it actually wasn't a virus. It was something that was designed using a viral model. But it was specifically to be using a viral model as a technology. So this whole idea of SARS or SARS-CoV actually doesn't exist in nature at all.
Dr. David Martin, and it is 14 minutes past six. You're with The Wireless, 88.1 FM in Northland, Hawke's Bay and Wellington. Here's the weather.
88.1 FM, The Wireless. Weather.
Let's look at the marine forecast, shall we? We'll go to New Zealand coastal situation. A ridge of high pressure continues to prevail across the North Island, whilst a cold front in the far south weakens as it slowly moves up the lower South Island today. Another frontal system arrives over the South Island late on Thursday, spreading across much of the country on Friday. The Bay of Islands today, southwest 10 knots, changing to northwest 15 knots for a time this afternoon. Sea slight, cloudy periods with fair visibility and isolated afternoon showers. An easterly swell of 1.5 metres, easing to 1 metre. Tomorrow, southwest 10 knots, fine weather with an easterly swell of 1 metre. Looking at Hawke's Bay today, westerlies 15 knots, easing to variable 5 knots by about midday. Westerlies 10 knots, developing late evening. Seas slight, mainly fine, a southeast swell of 1 metre, easing to 0.5 metre. And an easterly swell of 1 metre, easing to 0.5 metre. Tomorrow in Hawke's Bay, westerlies 10 knots, easing to variable 5 knots in the morning, becoming southwest 15 knots in the afternoon, fine weather and a southerly swell of 0.5 metre combined with an easterly swell of 0.5 metre. Looking at Wellington today, northerlies 10 knots, easing to variable 5 knots this morning, northerlies of 10 knots but 15 knots developing about the south coast this evening, sea slight, mainly fine for the south coast and Palliser Bay, you've got a southerly swell of 1 metre, easing to 0.5 metre, the Castle Point northeast swell of 1.5 metres, easing to 1 metre, and a southeast swell mixed in with it of 1 metre. Tomorrow in Wellington, northerlies 10 knots but 15 knots about the south coast, changing to southerly 15 knots in the morning and then easing to variable 5 knots. Fine weather but becoming cloudy for the south coast and Palliser Bay, a southerly swell of 0.5 metre rising to 1 metre, for Castle Point, northeast swell of 1 metre easing to 0.5 metre, and a southwest swell mixed in with half a metre, rising to 1.5 metres. We'll just have a look at Christchurch today. We've got a lot of South Island listeners. Variable 5 knots today. Easterlies 10 knots developing for a time this afternoon. Southwest 10 knots developing late evening. Seas slight, mainly fine, and easterly swell of 1 metre easing to 0.5 metre. Tomorrow in Christchurch, southwest 10 knots easing to variable 5 knots in the morning. Becoming northeast 10 knots in the afternoon. Cloud clearing with an easterly swell of 0.5 metre. Yeah, that is weather right up to date.
88.1 FM, The Wireless, New Zealand News.
All right, well, we're over at the Otago Daily Times now. Let's check them out. Also, if you're having a birthday today, the 16th of April, have a good one. Of course, in 1892, New Zealand Rugby Football Union was founded. As rugby grew in popularity in New Zealand, it became necessary to standardise the administration of the game. And that's the Rugby Football Union that was founded on this day in 1892. In 1912, news of the Titanic sinking reaches New Zealand. Although no New Zealanders were on board the world's largest passenger ship when it sank in chilly waters in the North Atlantic, with appalling loss of life, the country followed the news closely. Also on this day in 1973, Arthur Allen Thomas was convicted of the crew murders again. Waikato farmer Arthur Allen Thomas was found guilty for the second time of the 1970 murders of his Pukekaua neighbours, Harvey and Jeanette Crew. Let's go to the Otago Daily Times and the top stories there. News Hub staff are called to an important business update meeting. Staff of the soon-to-be-closed newsroom at News Hub have been called to a meeting today, according to News Hub. Christchurch rescue helicopter targeted with a laser. Police are searching for a person who pointed a green laser at a rescue helicopter while it was landing at Christchurch Hospital on Sunday night. And a beach dig linked to man's Cyclone Gabrielle disappearance. Police are searching a section of beach north of Napier in relation to a disappearance of Gisborne man Joseph Ahuriri during Cyclone Gabrielle. Stag killed after a vehicle attack on deer. A stag was hit by a vehicle, then killed in a targeted attack on a mob of deer near Nelson, according to police. Long COVID sufferers, they fear benefit rule change. People suffering from long COVID are scared that they will face penalties under the coalition government's benefit reset. And government told civilians could be killed in military op. The government has warned Yemeni civilians it could be killed in an operation in which New Zealand is involved to protect shipping in the Red Sea. Christchurch business sticks to its guns over a billboard claim. A Christchurch arms and hunting business appears to be sticking to its guns, defying an advertising standards authority demand to remove the misleading billboard. And that is Gun City. New pet bond aims to make renting with animals easier. The government has announced a 2-week pet bond and obligation for tenants to pay for damages their animals cause in a bid to make renting with animals easier. COVID-19, New Zealand bucked global life expectancy trends, apparently. The first two years of the COVID pandemic undid earlier success and increasing life expectancy, except for a handful of countries, New Zealand among them. Rainbow Crossing vandal to pay $16,000. A man charged with vandalising the Rainbow Crossing at Auckland's Karangahape Road has pleaded guilty and has been ordered to pay $16,000 in reparation. School classrooms contaminated with asbestos. Two school classrooms were extensively contaminated with the most dangerous type of asbestos after the wall linings were taken off without testing. A government won't commit emergency housing support past June. Funding for support services designed to help people out of temporary housing is due to expire in 2 months, and the government will not commit beyond that date. Let's have a bit of a change now, a bit of music now. This is a Bartender from Lady Antebellum. It's 20 minutes past six.
On Friday night, I'm still at home. All my girls just keep on blowing up my phone, saying, come on, he ain't worth the pain. Do what you gotta do to forget his name. Now there's only one thing left for me to do. Slip on my favorite dress and sky-high leather boots. Check the mirror one last time and kiss the past goodbye. Going till they cut me off. Wanna get a little lost in the noise.
body and the music and the truth collide.
Bring it till his memory fades away.
Hey, bartender. Tonight I'll let a stranger pull me on the floor. Stop, so pour that thing up to the top.
I'm coming in hot. Hey, bartender.
Four minutes past six with Grant Edwards and Digger Davidson on the wireless, 88.1 FM, Northland, Wellington and Hawke's Bay. And, well, today, 16th of April, we've got the Arthur Allen Thomas case, of course. Arthur Allen Thomas, he was convicted of the Crewe murders again on this day in 1973. The Waikato farmer Arthur Allen Thomas was found guilty for the second time of the 1970 murders of his Pukekaua neighbours, Harvey and Jeanette Crewe. As searchers discovered the Crewe's bullet-ridden bodies in the Waikato River 3 months after their disappearance in June 1970. The killer spared their two-month-old daughter, who was found in her cot by her grandfather 5 days after the parents went missing. Originally convicted of double murder in 1971, Thomas protested his innocence and appealed. A protracted legal struggle culminated in a retrial in March 1973. Despite doubts over police evidence, especially a cartridge case found in the Crewe's garden, Thomas was convicted for a second time. Influential books by journalists Pat Booth and David Yallop contributed to a public perception that Thomas's conviction was unjust. In 1979, he received an official pardon from the Prime Minister, Sir Robert Muldoon, after 9 years in jail. In 1980, a Royal Commission concluded that police had committed an unspeakable outrage by planting the cartridge case that was the key in the original conviction. Thomas received $950,000, the equivalent of $5 million in 2020. He received that in compensation. And there's some movies out there, Beyond Reasonable Doubt, 1980, that was released. I think that was David Yallop. And also, but the police weren't given up. And I've got a friend who is, an associate who is in the police, retired now. And he believes that Arthur Allen Thomas was definitely guilty, and even though the police did a terrible thing by planting the cartridge case, they believe that he was the man all along. And so they're not giving up on him, are they? And not very long ago, he was head up on historic sex charges. I've got a report about that, 25 minutes past six.
Arthur Allen Thomas's future is up in the air tonight after a jury was unable to reach verdict in his trial on historical sex abuse charges. The Crown now has a couple of months to decide whether to pursue a retrial. Nicole Bremner has followed events at Manukau District Court and is with us now. Nicole, what's the reaction been at court?
Well, Simon, after 2 weeks of evidence and 16 hours of deliberations across 3 days, the jury returned to court today to say they simply couldn't agree on the verdicts they had been deliberating. That's 5 charges, 4 of indecent assault and 1 of rape. The judge told the jury that these things happen in criminal trials. He acknowledged that they had tried their very best to reach a verdict before he dismissed them. He also took a moment to ensure that Arthur Thomas, he's now 83, he sat very quietly in the dock throughout these proceedings, actually understood what had just happened. Arthur Thomas nodded, he said he did, he thanked the judge, and then he spent time with his legal team, his family and the supporters who've been with him throughout the last 2 weeks before they all left the courtroom. It's an outcome that's left things unresolved for Arthur Alan Thomas.
We've got to the stage in this trial where effectively it's a hung jury. No verdicts have been able to be reached.
A hung jury, leaving the 83-year-old back where he was a fortnight ago, out on bail with his future up in the air.
Mr. Thomas, do you have anything to say?
It's now up to the Crown to decide where the case goes from here.
Sorry.
How long will it take the Crown to decide whether there should be a retrial?
Nothing to say at this point.
Arthur Thomas is no stranger to legal battles, and he wasn't backing down from this one.
He is here today fighting this case and saying these allegations, all of them, are simply not true.
The defence claimed the charges stemmed from a dispute about money, but the Crown alleged Thomas had abused 2 women when they were younger and had also encouraged others to participate. The allegations tested in a setting very familiar to Arthur Thomas.
Today most people know the debate about David Bain or Scott Watson, but in the 1970s the debate that defined the country was over Arthur Alan Thomas.
That's because the murders of Jeanette and Harvey Crewe 4 decades ago put Arthur Thomas at the forefront of one of this country's most notorious cold cases. In 1979, he was pardoned and paid commission close to $1 million for wrongful imprisonment lasting nearly a decade.
At the time, it was a massive payout and it was seen as deserved.
And then a Royal Commission of Inquiry found police had planted evidence in the Crewe's garden, effectively framing Arthur Thomas.
It tarnished the reputation of the police.
40 years on, another trial, this one complicated by the historical nature of the allegations.
The passage of time can be one of the best defences, but the police would not have undertaken this case unless they thought they had a fair chance of conviction.
It's now up to the Crown to decide whether to bring Arthur Alan Thomas back before the court on these charges.
Well, after
Nicole
all these
years, One News.
Thank you very much. And after all these years, the police are certainly not giving up on Arthur Alan Thomas, are they? They've got it in for him, that's for sure. Is he guilty? What do you think?
One of the interesting things about the difference between Christianity and Islam, by the way, we have an idiot political class in all of our countries that pretends sometimes for the sake just simply of interfaith dialogue, sometimes simply for the sake of fudging along, and sometimes just because they don't know what they're talking about. They pretend that all religions are basically the same. And, you might practice Christianity, I might practice Islam, and he might practice yoga. And it all comes out the same. It's not true.
Douglas Murray there. And we'll be hearing from Dr. David Martin as well as we go through this week. Got one coming up from him right now. 6:30? Half past six. Goodness me, we've got another half hour to go, Digger.
Oh, I know. We're slaving on that this morning, aren't we?
This is one of those things where you sit back and you go, the audacity of the crime is what's surprising. The crime is not Moderna and Pfizer. They're just the arms dealers. The crime is actually what allowed them to become arms dealers and why on earth we actually have declared war on humanity. That's the crime.
So they're the arms dealers, eh? Gosh, unbelievable, isn't it? Well, this is a bit interesting. This is an actor. He sees the real Jesus. Do you believe it or not?
Back in 1975, Ernest Borgnine was offered a part in the film Jesus of Nazareth as the centurion. When it came time for his scene, the director put a chalk mark on a piece of scenery beside the cameraman and told Ernest to look up at that mark as if he were looking at Jesus Christ. Ernest hesitated, then asked if somebody could read from the Bible the words Jesus said as he hung on the cross. The director agreed to read it, and as he began to read, Ernest stared upward. Instead of the chalk mark, he suddenly saw the face of Jesus Christ looking at him through tragic and sorrowful eyes with an expression of love beyond description as blood and sweat dripped down his face. He then heard Jesus' voice and not the voice of the director, then watched in awe as his head fell and knew that he was dead. Oblivious to the camera, Ernest started sobbing uncontrollably. The director then immediately cut the scene. Ernest wiped his eyes, and when he looked up again to where he had seen Jesus, he was gone.
Goodness. 29 minutes away from 7, you're with Grant Edwards and Digger Davidson on the Wireless 88.1 FM.
It's important to realize that when we talk about the World Health Organization, we're not talking about an institution of the United Nations. We're talking about a criminal conspiracy that was put in place by two foundations who had a commercial interest in building a criminal liability shield for themselves. That's what it is. Never was a health organization, it was a criminal organization. And by criminal, I literally mean that under the Clayton Act in the United States and under the Sherman Act in the United States and under the competitiveness laws of Europe, what they did was a crime. They colluded, they price fixed, they did all of the things which were antitrust violations, but put it under the umbrella of public health, and everybody's supposed to go, oh, they're doing it for the good of humanity. Except when you look at the actual financial statements of the World Health Organization, you find out that by 1950, and then again in 1955, the singular focus of the World Health Organization was, are you ready for this? Vaccine promotion. We have the Director General of the World Health Organization going one step further and saying, and I'm quoting, this is about population control. Now, what does that mean? That means that when we're taking orders from the World Health Organization, we're not. And fast forward to the Gates Foundation, which most people don't realize was an undisclosed settlement between the U.S. Department of Justice and the Gates convicted felony antitrust violations, right? This was not, there was an allegation Microsoft did bad things. This is a, they were convicted of antitrust crimes. Quite mysteriously, the Gates Foundation just shows up and instantaneously starts laundering money into, are you ready for this? The World Health Organization.
Dr. David Martin there, and it's 28 minutes away from 7. Let's look at the Post in Wellington. A long tunnel under Wellington being considered. The tunnel would be a twin two-lane tunnel, 4 kilometres in length. That could cut 15 minutes off travel. And phantom liquor licences sighted in Courtney Place Bar. That's a bar battle. Health authorities who claim there were already up to 200 licensed venues within 500 metres of the pub. They were opposing, but concede they inflated the numbers. Tom Hunt has that story at The Post. You'll find The Post at thepost.co.nz. And a plan for water cremation has been rejected by the Health Ministry. A Christchurch company hoping to give Kiwis a greener send-off is considering its legal options after being refused permission to offer water cremations. How on earth they do that in the water, I don't know. Maybe they just burn the body and then sprinkle the ashes, must be. Family wants compensation over flooded, rat-infested house. His family were advised to sell the home, which had been rat-infested and flood-damaged, after there was nothing left in the trust to do it up. They went to court instead. Hamish McNally has that report. And Tom Hunt says that I know what the discharge there, the ex-wastewater plant workers, fears. A former worker at the problem-plagued Titai Bay wastewater plant won't swim there. Well, I don't think I'd swim at a wastewater plant, would you? Not really. Or let his family in the water over sewage discharge concerns. And Culture Bites, 15th of April, New Zealand supergroup. When the Cat's Away, they're back with a tour after 34 years. Piers Fuller has that story. And Greenie queries cycle lane safety as desperate neighbours negotiate parking. Wellington cycleway rollout has come under fire in one of the city's greenest suburbs, with one avid rider saying the Arrow Valley section was safer without it. Julie Jacobson has that story. And a family farm that could be a heritage listed. It may look like it's falling down old buildings on sprawling paddocks near Matamata, but Heritage New Zealand has assessed it for Category 1 status. There we are. Those are the main stories over at The Post. We go to One News now, and their big story, the big top story, is what if Wales could take us to court? A move to grant Wales legal personhood. should include the right to sue, writes Rachel Evans. And a second major Sydney stabbing, church targeted, angry mob descends. A Christian bishop and three churchgoers were stabbed during a televised service 2 days after the Bondi stabbings. Fair go. How long should a wedding ring last? Two couples have come to fair go, saying the rings they purchased from Michael Hill Jeweller haven't stood the test of time. And what does regularly attending school actually mean? There's a report over there at onenews.co.nz. The government has set some ambitious targets for lifting the number of students regularly going to school. But what does regular attendance look like? First look, New Zealand's first large-scale dam built in the last 30 years. The cost of the Waimea Dam in Nelson is nearly twice the original price and could increase further. Singapore Prime Minister steps down after Luxon meeting. Prime Minister Luxon has paid tribute to the outgoing Singaporean leader. Middle East casts shadow over Luxon's trade trip to the Southeast Asia. Prospect of war between Iran and Israel has dominated the first few days of Prime Minister Christopher Luxon's first foray into the area. And Trump hush money trial starts today with the jury selection. It's the first criminal trial of a former commander-in-chief and the first of Trump's four indictments to go to trial. Online watchdog urges public not to share images of Bondi attack. Joel Cauchy, who was 40, fatally stabbed six people and seriously wounded 12 others in a violent rampage at Sydney's Westfield Bondi, Westfield Mall, I think it was. A News Hub staff, they've been called to an important meeting today. A News Hub staff said the members were sent an email on Monday in the evening about the meeting. Kiwi mountain biker Jess Blewett on return to international stage. Story there, the 21-year-old is among New Zealand riders getting ready to head off World Cup the season. There we are, and out of character, the Bondi killer's mum speaks. She apologises to the public. She said, "This is the parents' absolute nightmare when they have a child with mental illness that something like this would happen." More farmers' cows and Taranaki grazers' care go missing. MPI wants answers to and is investigating Miles Whitey's use or lack of use of the NATE animal tracking system. And what do we know so far about the Bondi Mall stabbings? There's a story over there. Five women and one man has died in the stabbing spree at Westfield Bondi Junction on Saturday. They've got an in-depth report over there. Now, a group deliberately targeted deer with a vehicle, leaving one dead. The stag was struck by the vehicle and was subsequently killed by those involved. Cyclone Gabrielle wrought havoc here, but also supplied a debris from cyclone. I hate it when they stop half a sentence and have a few dots. Debris from Cyclone Gabrielle will be put to good use at a flat point on the Carterton coast. Oh, good. That's good, isn't it? And how law will put onus on landlords to explain why pets are denied. The government is not yet clear on what reasonable grounds landlords have to provide or to deny pets in their properties. And that just looks like we've just about wrapped things up. Also, Loving a Monster, the Bondi killer's dad speaks out. Andrew Cauchy's son, Joel, killed six people and wounded 12 on the rampage. Yeah, we know that. Okay, Joseph Huriri, he disappeared. The police are excavating at the moment an attempt to travel from Napier to his home. The Gisborne man, around about the time of the Cyclone Gabrielle last February, excavators are working now on the Eyre Beach just north of Napier. Super Rugby power rankings. Kane catches fire ahead of something. Oh, I have to click on it. I have to click on it to see what it says. Analysis. Oh, it's a big long analysis. The Hurricanes are flying as high as they ever have, but they're about to embark on one of the toughest trips in the game, writes Patrick McKendry. So if you go over to onenews.co.nz, you can find out, you can read all about it. Let's go over to rnz.co.nz, the latest news there. Secrecy shrounds the projects as submissions close. Not even members of Parliament, are supposed to be scrutinising the fast track, are allowed to know which projects could bypass normal planning rules. Other top stories over at rnz.co.nz. Public service cuts, $6.3 million in payouts,
at one ministry so far. The total cost of redundancies across the public service is not yet known, and the finance minister has not asked for an estimated price tag. Sydney Bishop, among multiple people allegedly stabbed in a church meeting. A man is in custody after at least four people were injured in an alleged stabbing incident in a church, at a church in Christchurch last night. And a search for Joseph, we read about that before. Hey, let's have a listen to the 6 o'clock bulletin. Are we allowed to do that? Probably not. 24 minutes away from seven. This is RNZ's 6 o'clock bulletin.
RNZ News at 6 o'clock. Kia ora, good morning. I'm Nicola Wright. The cost of slashing public servants at a single government department has already exceeded $6 million. The Ministry of Business, Innovation and Employment is among agencies axing jobs as part of the Coalition's public service cuts. MB has so far paid 138 staff redundancy payouts, totalling $6.3 million. That figure's set to increase as the ministry has confirmed it's axing almost 300 jobs. It's not yet known how much redundancies across the wider public service will cost. MB's the first department to reveal how much it's spent so far. The Finance Minister's office confirms she's not received advice on the estimated price tag. Meanwhile, Nicola Willis says the government will create more jobs in the economy overall than it cuts from the public service. She told First Up there will be other jobs those people who are made redundant can apply for.
Jobs actually across the economy are continuing to be created, and what I think that means for people who lose their jobs, which is a really tough time, is that there are going to be new opportunities for them to look for.
Nicola Willis says the government's budget in May will include more frontline roles, such as police. New York prosecutors have asked a judge at the start of Donald Trump's criminal hush money trial to fine him and remind him he could go to jail for violating a gag order. They spoke on the start of the trial, which stems from a 2016 hush money payment to adult film star Stormy Daniels. Prosecutors asked the judge to fine Donald Trump $1,700 for each of the three social media posts this month about Stormy Daniels and his own former lawyer, Michael Cohen. The gag order bans the former president from making public statements about witnesses, prosecutors, court staff and their family members. The trial has begun today with jury selection, which is expected to take a week. The Prime Minister says escalating tension in the Middle East is the last thing the region needs. Christopher Luxon is on a week-long trip through Singapore, Thailand and the Philippines in an effort to build relationships through Southeast Asia. After sitting down with his Singaporean counterpart Lee Hsien Loong yesterday, he told reporters both countries want peace in the Middle East.
We're both countries that respect international rule of law. We're both countries that respect humanitarian law, and our positions are very much aligned. As we've seen in the Middle East, what we've been saying and what we want to continue to say is that we, you know, really want people to exercise restraint. This is the last thing this region needs, is an escalation of tension.
Christopher Luxon and Lee Hsien Loong agreed to strengthen supply chains between the countries to streamline trade in times of crisis. Police will continue digging up a Hawke's Bay beach today as part of their investigation into the disappearance of Gisborne man Joseph Ahuriri during Cyclone Gabrielle. Mr Ahuriri was last seen refuelling his white Toyota Hilux at a service station in Bayview, north of Napier, early on February the 14th last year. Lauren Crimp reports.
There's been no sign of Joseph Ahuriri for 14 months. But yesterday, police began digging up the beach near the Esk River mouth north of Napier. Lynn Noanoa lives nearby and told RNZ it was a hive of activity, with diggers and police officers coming and going all day. Late last year, police and GNS Science searched the wider Eskdale area with a special drone that identifies large metallic objects buried underground. Police expected the results last month, but won't say whether the current search is related to the findings.
Police in Sydney have been pelted with bottles and bricks during unrest outside a church in southwest Sydney after several people were stabbed last night during a service.
Oh, that looks like that's the end of it. Oh, thanks very much, Nicola. Nicola Wright there from Radio New Zealand. You'll find all that news, all the reports over at rnz.co.nz. It's 15 minutes away from 7. Weather is next.
Secret meeting that changed rap music and destroyed a generation. I finally decided to tell the world what I witnessed in 1991. He explained that the companies we worked for had invested millions into the building of privately owned prisons and that our positions of influence in the music industry would actually impact the profitability of these investments. Sure enough, someone asked what these prisons were and what any of this had to do with music. We were told that these prisons were built by privately owned companies who received funding from the government based on the number of inmates.
Mm-hmm.
The more inmates, the more the government would pay these prisons.
Mm-hmm.
It was also made clear to us that since these prisons are privately owned, as they become publicly traded, we'd be able to buy shares. Our job would be to help make this happen by making music which promote criminal behavior, rap being the music of choice.
Oh, but you didn't know that. Coming up to 7 o'clock, quarter two, and we've got weather next. Yeah, and then we've got a song from Dawn. I wonder if you know what it might be.
88.1 FM, The Wireless Weather.
We're looking at the short forecast, but before we do, let's look at the extremes. Auckland has the highest temperature, 15.6 degrees. Twizel's on 1.2, that's the lowest. Castle Point's the windiest, 26 kilometres of wind blowing through there. And Milford Sound has 3.4 millimetres of rain. Temperatures right across the main centres. Invercargill, 12 degrees. Dunedin's on 10. Very cool at the moment in Timaru, 3 degrees. Chatham Islands, 10 degrees. Christchurch, 6. Blenheim's on 5. Back down to Queenstown, 8 degrees. Franz Josef and Westport are on 9 and 10 degrees. Across to the North Island, lower North Island, and Wellington's on 10, Masterton 4, Palmerston North 14 degrees, Napier 9, New Plymouth's on 14, Taupo and Rotorua on 10 and 13 degrees for Rotorua, Gisborne 11 degrees, Tauranga 14, Hamilton's on 10, Auckland 16 degrees, Whangarei 13 and Kaitaia cool up there at the moment with 9 degrees. The short forecast valid until midnight tomorrow night in the west from Northland to Manawatu, including Coromandel Peninsula and Tombaranui. Showers becoming isolated from this afternoon. A Bay of Plenty, Taupo and Taihape mainly fine today with a shower or two. For Gisborne and Wairarapa, mainly fine. Brief showers possibly about the Tararua district. Horobanua, Kapiti Coast, Wellington, Marlborough and Nelson, mainly fine today. For Buller and Fiordland, a few showers but rain some heavy about Fiordland. Rain spreading elsewhere this afternoon and evening, whilst easing to a few showers in Fiordland and southern Westland. For Canterbury, fine weather at first, apart from early morning fog patches. Scattered showers from the afternoon south of Ashburton, possibly heavy. Otago and Southland, rain spreading north this morning and afternoon, possibly heavy in the east, and then easing south of Dunedin from evening. And the Chatham Islands, mostly cloudy, with a few light showers. All right, we've got a song for you now. Here we go. This takes you back to 73.
Answer is no. Oh, my sweetness.
means you'll meet me in the hallway. Whoa, twice on the pie means you ain't gonna show. Ceiling if you want me. Whoa, twice on the pie if the answer is no.
I love you, I love you.
Oh, my sweetness means you'll meet me in the hallway. Twice on the pie means you ain't gonna show.
Tony Lando and Dawn from 1973, I believe. Yeah, pretty good to knock three times on the... Now, Digger, what have you found?
Well, it's outside. And, you know, Meg, she's torn up that brand-new dog mat you bought her. Her sleeping arrangements. She must have got bored in the night.
This is our new Hunterway, isn't it?
Yes. Yes, she's made a real mess, mate. You don't ever look at it.
What'd you pay for that thing?
Quite a few dollars. Anyway, better... She'll be sleeping on straw now if she can carry on like that. Obviously,
she just got bored, didn't she?
Yeah, I suppose so. I suppose she did.
All right. Now, what have we got? David Martin still. We're going to have him for most of the week, Dr. David Martin. We'll just have a quick check, see if there's any news stories. We're over at the Centrist at the moment. You'll find them at centrist.co.nz or thecentrist.co.nz. Confidential CDC report reveals adverse events linked to COVID vaccines include seizures, miscarriages and more. Adverse events linked to COVID vaccines were disclosed following a court order. These are the facts brought to you by the Centrist. .co.nz. Release data revealed that the complications including heart inflammation and suicidal thoughts. The CDC was aware of these severe side effects like myocarditis but did not publicise it until legal action. Other top stories at thecentrist.co.nz. Global study debunks sea level rise alarmism as islands expand despite climate fears. So the opposite of what we've been told is true. Emotionally manipulative tactics used to influence kids through trendy political causes. In reality, running a government can't be vibes-based. And what's behind the decline in media trust? Real soul-searching should mean that the media reflects on how it has allowed itself to be perceived as distant, elitist, and conformist. Other stories, we've got that one. Also, the NZ News Essentials, you'll find them at nznewsessentials.com. New Zealand unprepared for EV fire risks. An Official Information Act document reveals Part 5, the Centrist exclusive investigation into the government's lack of preparedness in dealing with the potential for an EV fire. New Zealand, yeah, we've got that's a repeat. Repeat's all unprepared. Oh, they've got it's a huge one. It's like I think it's up to about five parts. One part, one, two, three, four, and five. A plan for balance in New Zealand government media. State-owned media is too large, a part of New Zealand's market for its politics to be left to chance. Those stories at thecentrist.co.nz and NZ News Essentials. There we are. Here's Dr. David Martin. It's 6 minutes away from seven.
So while the rest of what I'm going to call the Liberty Movement moved down the pathway of speaking about the violations of individual liberties and the violation of basic health provisions and the violation of the patient-doctor relationship and all the things which are actually correct in terms of the assessment of there was something wrong there, I decided to swing the pendulum even further towards I'm going to stay absolutely laser focused on the criminality of what was happening. And as I've said in numerous interviews, and as I continue to say, we have to go back to 1913 to understand this crime. And specifically what we have to do is we have to look at the Rockefeller Foundation and then a few years later, the Wellcome Trust, which became the colluding parties that authorized the idea of allopathic medicine becoming the agency through which behavior modification would be done through medicine. Remember that the Flexner report had come out, and it had basically said that if you had another way of healing other than the industrial pharmaceutical way of healing, it was going to be deemed quackery and we were going to throw it out the window. Shortly thereafter, you had the Wellcome Trust being set up. And if you look at the Wellcome Trust going into the Second World War, it was very explicitly the commercial offense of the United Kingdom on the German pharmaceutical chemical industrial complex. So to the point where if people want to, they can go back and they can look at literal battle plans. And I don't mean metaphoric, actual battle plans drawn by the Wellcome Trust on how you invade Germany to take out the pharmaceutical manufacturers and the chemical manufacturers of Germany. So when I say it was a battle, I'm not metaphoric in this. There's actually archive documents that show you that they had battle plans about how to take out the various, you know, chloroquines and the various drugs for malaria, the aspirins, all kinds of things. And it's bizarre to look at this. Obviously, cocaine, one of the very major pieces of that pharmacopoeia back then, which was in the business of the pharmaceutical industries in the late 20s and early 30s. And so if we don't go back in time, we actually miss the point that the Rockefeller Foundation and the Wellcome Trust became the organizing entities, which ultimately in 1947 put the World Health Organization on the map. But what's really interesting in that is in the charter of the UN-affiliated organizations for the World Health Organization, they wrote into the charter the absolute liability shield from all criminal prosecution in perpetuity for any person associated with the World Health Organization and its and any of its activities, where it quite specifically goes down to the level of saying you cannot be prosecuted for any crime of any manner in any way as long as you do it under the umbrella of the World Health Organization.
3 minutes away from seven, we're over at rnz.co.nz. Single Ministry has spent $6.3 million for job cut payouts so far. The total cost of redundancies across the public service... Oh, what happened there? The total cost of redundancies across the public service is not yet known, and the Finance Minister has not asked for an estimate. Bishop, among multiple people stabbed in Sydney Church... A man's in custody after at least four people were injured in an alleged stabbing incident at a church in Sydney on Monday night. Secrecy shrouds which projects might be fast-tracked. Not even the MPs, they're supposed to be scrutinising the fast-track bill, not even they know which projects could bypass the rules. Donald Trump arrives at a Manhattan court for the first day of trial. Prosecutors have made an extra request for the first ever criminal trial of a former US president. It begins today. News in brief, Tararua turns out for the new skateboard park. Better than late than ever, they say. The locals in a Coromandel resort town are celebrating a new facility that's been decades in the making. Over to New Caledonia now. Up north, the pro-independence activists, they issued dire warnings to France. A pro-independence activist in New Caledonia is warning France to immediately halt planned constitution amendments or face all-out war. And in sport, a privately owned league answers Blackstick's wishes. Why is hockey turning to private ownership and what it means for New Zealand's best players? That story at rnz.co. And long COVID sufferers, they fear a benefit rule change. Sarah McRae is in agony, just trying to drive her children to school. She's looking for work. It's impossible, though, she says. And really, it's a vaccine injury. We all know that, don't we? Everyone that listens to our program knows that it's not long COVID. That's just a cover for vaccine injuries. Just like viruses are a cover for childhood vaccines. Yep, you heard it here. You heard it here at The Wireless with Grant Edwards and Digger Davidson. Isn't that right, Digger?
Yes, I agree 100% with everything you say. I'm still pissed off about the dog, Meg, in Hunterway, chewing up a bedding.
Well, she must have been really bored. Did you give her a bone?
Oh, I gave her a leg of lamb.
What, a whole leg?
No, just the hock, you know.
Oh, okay. Does she prefer lamb or beef?
She actually prefers beef. She likes beef and beef fat. Not that keen on the lamb.
Well, that's good. So hopefully our lambs won't go missing then. She's not that keen on them. She doesn't like the smell of it. So, yeah, I'm not that fond of lamb either. I prefer beef. Give me beef. I could just eat minced meat, you know, three times a day. In fact, I've been eating one point, well, I had been. I've run out of minced meat, or ground beef, they call it in the United States. I've run out. I've got, I used to eat 1.1 to 1.2 kilograms of ground beef every day. But now I've just got roasts left, so I cut them up. I actually just cook them slowly as a steak, nice big fat chunks, delicious. And I keep the fat that they were cooking in, you know, yesterday, the day before, heat that up, and away we go. Hey, what do you think of the milk?
Oh, it's lovely, isn't it? Gosh, it looks very yellow, though.
Well, that's just because we're not used to having real milk, you know, raw milk. It's got, probably might have a bit of colostrum in it too, I don't know.
It's lovely. I whip the cream off the top of it there and give it a shake around.
Did you know? Yeah, I did notice that my coffee was better, Digger. It's very nice. All right, that's our lot. It's 7 o'clock and we'll see you tomorrow morning. Today is Tuesday the 16th. If you're having a birthday today, I hope you have a good one. Just to refresh on things that happened on this day, of course, in 1892, New Zealand Rugby Football Union was founded. As rugby grew in popularity in New Zealand, it became necessary to standardise the administration of the game in the colony. Despite some opposition, a New Zealand Rugby Football Union was founded on this day. In 1912, I beg your pardon, news of the Titanic sinking reaches New Zealand. Although no New Zealand passengers, although there was one fellow who had booked, but he couldn't make it, so he was saved. Although no New Zealanders were aboard the world's largest passenger ship, which sank in the chilly North Atlantic waters with appalling loss of life, the country followed the news very closely. And also on this day in 1973, Arthur Allen Thomas, convicted of the crew murders again. Waikato farmer Arthur Allen Thomas was found guilty for the second time of the 1970 murders of Pukekaua neighbours Harvey and Jeanette Crew. Well, that's our lot. We'll see you tomorrow morning. Here's Dr. David Martin, and we're back to the best of the 70s to the noughties here at The Wireless, 88.1 FM.
If you look at the financial statements, beginning with the Gates Foundation, when it was established, you start seeing an anomaly. It used to be that UN-associated organizations, and specifically the World Health Organization, had two line items for most countries. The country, through an organization like the State Department or through a line item budget, would allocate money to the World Health Organization. And then there's the corporation for the same country, and there's another allocation coming from there. But with Wellcome Trust, Rockefeller Foundation, and Gates Foundation, and the minor players like the Bloomberg Foundation and a couple others now, but mostly the top three, suddenly we actually have the formation of what we called the Global Preparedness Monitoring Board. Well, who's sitting on that? Dr. Elias from the Gates Foundation, Anthony Fauci from NIAID, you know, Jeremy Farr from the Wellcome Trust. I mean, this is a criminal conspiracy. And I'm not saying that from the standpoint of conspiracy theory. I'm saying that from the definition of what it means to be a criminal conspiracy. And so if you ask the question, which is a legitimate thing to do, was the FDA, was the CDC following orders from the WHO? The answer is asterisk almost. But who were they really following orders from? And that's where you get into the nasty answer, which is the answer was that interlocking directorate, that violation of antitrust laws, that corporate machine, not health, not, you know, we're out for the good of humanity. That corporate criminal conspiratorial organization that was guilty at the time of racketeering, was guilty at the time of interlocking directorates, all felonies, was guilty at the time of price fixing, another felony, which was guilty at the time of actually suppressing commercial alternatives, which is called market allocation, another felony. That criminal organization announced that it was going to take over the world, and they did.
Now, another hour of the best of the 70s, 80s, 90s, and noughties. This is The Wireless.